something ain't right. Gotta hear the latest news of the day. What crazy thing did our president say? There's commies to the left of me, Nazis to the right. Here I am listening to Justice and Drew. Here I am listening to Justice and Drew.
Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you.
Can you dig it?
Dilly dilly.
And I know it's gonna be.
Can you dig it?
No. Mm-mm.
A lovely day.
Mm-mm. No. No.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Good morning. Welcome to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew.
No. No.
Yeah.
Hell no.
Yes.
No.
I am Drew.
No.
That man over there.
Oh, my.
Is a fully rested John Justice.
Yes.
Missed my sleep flight last night. Gosh darn it.
In there.
Aw.
Hate that.
Just wildly pushing buttons.
It's the worst.
Ham-handedly mashing buttons.
No!
It's the lovely, talented, and radiant Sam Sansevier. Let's start off with this.
Trump tweets.
Already?
Trump tweets. Trump tweets.
Yeah, yeah.
Trump tweets.
Trump tweets.
He always tweets.
What now?
Oh, sh**.
An early morning for our president.
He never sleeps.
An early morning for our president. 1 hour ago, Donald Trump tweeted, "Our infrastructure plan has been put forward and has received great reviews by everyone, except, of course, the Democrats."
True story.
Wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
"After many years, we have taken care of our military. Now we have to fix our roads, bridges, tunnels, airports, and more. Bipartisan, comma, make deal Dems."
You know, even with those new Twitter limits,
yeah,
he
kind of ran out of bipartisan, comma, make deal Dem.
Shoulders shrug, palms up, head tilt. Don't know.
Did he do the little shoulder shrug emoji?
Yeah.
No, I think he ran out of characters.
He doesn't do emojis, does he?
No.
He should do.
I want a president that uses emojis.
Yeah, he needs to start. He needs to step up his
what you wish for.
Yeah, he needs to step up his emoji game.
Please be careful what you wish for.
All the North Korea tweets with a little bomb emoji next to it.
I want... Wow, talk about stepping in, like, you know, in terms of the constitutionality of things. Does that warrant a threat? Is that a declaration of war?
Yeah.
Diplomacy via emoji.
If he puts the little, you know, Civil War, you know, cannon.
It's diplomacy.
Ha! I get it.
And then
diplomacy.
The president tweeted immediately after that, because they both say they were 1 hour ago. "Negotiations on DACA have begun.
Yeah.
Republicans want to make a deal, and Democrats say they want to make a deal. Wouldn't it be great if we could finally, after so many years, solve the DACA puzzle? This will be our last chance. There will never be another opportunity. March 5th.
I don't disagree. At least at the moment, I don't disagree with that. I think that Trump is the only president, you know, that's able to do this. Because I don't think there'll be another Trump. And any other president that gets elected more than likely is going to follow along just sort of your typical presidency. And they're going to follow along party lines. And the Democrats and Republicans, both sides, neither of them want to solve this problem. And I think Trump is like, he doesn't care. He just wants to get something done. So if he's going to get something done, it's going to get done now.
I do think the Republicans genuinely want to pass something that would be considered solving this problem.
Some.
Some.
Not all.
Some. Because I think they benefit more politically from it, because they get to shed that sort of anti-immigrant label if they can say that we were the party in charge when this got passed. Democrats run on being the party that supports immigrants, but when push comes to shove, when the rubber hits the road, so to speak, and a solution is attainable, now their true colors are being shown.
Right.
Because they know that once they have a solution, they lose an election issue.
We're going to be talking with Julio Rivera from ReactionaryTimes.com. He's also from Newsmax and Clash Daily about this very issue, the fate of undocumented Democrats, according to him, and what may happen on DACA. That'll be just after 7 o'clock this morning. We've got Dr. Yoram Bauman, the stand-up economist, who's performing this evening, right, at Kauffman Memorial Union?
At the University of Minnesota, correct?
Yeah, he'll be joining us in studio just after 8 o'clock.
Pete Hegseth from Fox News doing his normal Tuesday visit at 8:35. And in the top five, we're going to talk about the Fishbach, the Michelle Fishbach case got dismissed yesterday. We'll give lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien a little victory lap.
Cool.
Because on the show last week.
Yeah, he nailed it.
He kind of nailed it.
He nailed it.
That's why he's the lawyer extraordinaire.
Coming up in a few minutes, right before we get to Sam's top five, we will talk about what is the fastest color. We'll get into that, right? It's a really interesting article, and it involves Norway, so we'll talk about that real quick.
We are your clearinghouse for Norway news.
Right, that's right. Real quick, I want to encourage everybody to go to TwinCitiesNewsTalk.com and the Justice and Drew page if you haven't seen it yet. The story makes me laugh, but the news outlet that put up the graphic for the Olympics, and instead of putting it's Pyongyang, right?
Pyeongchang.
They put up PF Chang's.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's hysterical. Yeah, the restaurant.
Typo?
Yeah, oh yeah, of course it was a typo. And it was funny because they had it on Fox News this morning and one of the correspondents was talking about it and she goes, "Well, you know, I don't mean to get too far into the weeds here, but you know that is an honest mistake. Sometimes those graphics are really little and you could do a typo and not realize it." I'm like, "Oh, come on."
PF Chang's.
Yeah. That sounds like more like an autocorrect that didn't get noticed than a typo.
Yeah, I think from here on out when we talk about the Olympics, it should be referred to. They're playing the games at PF Chang's. In PF Chang. But we'll talk about what is the fastest color. PF Chang's is good stuff. A little pricey, but it's tasty.
Actually, never been to one.
Really?
I don't think I've ever been to a PF Chang's either.
We should all totally like plan on going and then have it not happen.
Yeah, we always make plans, but they always fall through.
I know. One of us flakes out. Yeah, it usually happens. We're bad that way.
Which one?
Don't look at me. It's not usually me.
I'm just going to stare at the wall.
John's not going to look in anybody's eyes.
Hey, Sam, how's the scouring going?
It's going okay. Better than our plans usually do.
That never falls through is the plan to bring you the top five stories you need to know to kick off your day. We'll do that next.
Justice and Drew. Along with an accident-prone Sam.
Thankful to be alive.
Almost
Hashtag blessed.
Died in the studio next door a moment ago.
nobody would have seen it. They would have been like, where's Sam?
Where did Sam go?
Where did Sam go? Neither of these two were looking, and I tripped on my way back to my studio chair. I almost smacked my face on the board.
Twin Cities News Talk. Real quick, out of Care 11.
Break your collarbone?
Not yet. Yeah.
For 90 years, Norway has wore red at the Olympics. It's tradition. The Norwegians were really, really fast. They won 80 speed skating medals, the second most all time. So why are they wearing blue suits now at PF Chang's? Apparently, the speed skating suits are designed to help the skaters gain as much speed as possible without resistance. But now they're saying that blue is the fastest color, and Norway thinks so. So there's a scientist behind the country suit change. He told the New York Times, "What I've said is our new blue suit is faster than our old red suit, and I stand by that."
But he didn't say why. Like, what makes the color of the suit less resistant? More aerodynamic.
Doesn't it have something to do with it helps with cognitive ability or something? Like, it stimulates the proper quick decision-making?
You know, it's... It's not in the story. They asked this assistant professor for a program of color science at the Rochester Institute of Technology in New York, and they said there's no scientific reason as to why blue would be faster. But to what you're saying, I do remember reading an extensive study about that where they talked about how depending on what your job set was, you could place colors in front of you to stimulate your brain to react in better ways to what Sam was saying. Like green did something different.
Like psychosomatic.
Blue did something different. Well, I think it actually wouldn't even. Well, I guess.
Yeah, it's triggering.
There you go. Okay,
and like an emotion, it's triggering a maybe a chemical reaction in your brain.
And I don't have the source in front of me, but I heard another version of that particular story where they were talking about how that was a factor.
Yeah, they say they won the 80 speed skating medals, but only four since 98. So they're moving off of red. If the athletes believe the blue is faster than red, either the athlete wearing the suit or one of the competitors, there could be a measurable placebo effect.
That's not science, honey.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, that's a huge part of it. If it makes them think that they could be faster, that's a huge part of performance.
It's always the joke when I say I wash my car and it drives better. It's just psychosomatic. I would swear that it does.
You feel like it does.
I do absolutely feel like it does. I would, and I stand by that because it does. It's more aerodynamic, less dirt.
Blue makes them feel faster.
See, I agree with you that I feel like my car drives a little bit better after it gets a car wash. I don't think it's because it's more aerodynamic. I think it's because it cleans all the gunk out of the car.
There's less wind resistance. It's true.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a car doctor. I don't know.
You know, that's why the planes are smooth. That's why they spend so much time on the NASCAR race cars on super speedways to make them aerodynamic.
Car wash every time they go in a pit stop.
Well, no, but they do before they start the race.
If it's your dirt and grime, you're not. They go your car over doesn't get that
with
dirty.
With a fine tooth comb. You have no idea.
I don't think
idea.
They're out there combing your NASCAR.
There were guys during qualifying on Sunday, because the windows are open, they have the window nets. There were guys during qualifying on Sunday that put their hand up. I'm not kidding you. They put their hand up to block the one little space where the airflow was getting into the car to stop the air from getting into the car to slow the car down because they're that close to match speed. Mm. So you can't tell me that getting all of the grime off my car doesn't make it go faster. It's science.
But do you drive faster after it's washed?
Maybe.
Jeez, that's so dumb.
Hey, it makes me happy.
That's all that matters.
Exactly.
At the end of the day, you should just leave it at that and stop trying to come up with even more reasons.
No,
just say
no.
It makes me happier.
I just got to be me, man. Just let me be
you
me.
You think he's going to change now?
Seriously, exactly. I'm 45 years old. Do you think any of this is going to get worse?
If anything.
If anything. Exactly. You know what else makes me happy? Sam's top five.
Yep. Get right into the top five stories you need to know to kick off your Tuesday.
Number one.
Donald Trump Jr.'s wife was taken to the hospital after opening an envelope with some suspicious white powder. From the Associated Press, Donald Trump Jr.'s wife, Vanessa Trump, and two others were taken to a New York City hospital for evaluation after opening a suspicious envelope containing an unidentified substance. President Trump's daughter-in-law opened the letter addressed to Donald Trump Jr. just after 10 a.m. at the couple's Manhattan apartment.
Well, that's the first part of the story that's a problem.
Oops.
It wasn't addressed to her.
Right? Yeah. Open your own mail.
Who does she think she is?
It's unclear what the white powder was, but authorities tested the substance and found it to be non-hazardous.
Yeah, it turns out it was, there's an update to this, it was cornstarch.
Oh, Vanessa Trump was taken to the hospital as precaution. Two other people who were also exposed to the powder, if you go by Donald Trump Jr.'s tweets afterwards, mm-hmm. it sounds like it was probably his children. Mm-hmm. But the two other people that were exposed to the powder were also taken to the hospital. A hazmat crew was called to the scene and began decontamination procedures shortly after the incident. Trump Jr. tweeted of the scary situation yesterday afternoon and blamed the incident on people with opposing views. Trump Jr. said, "Thankful that Vanessa and my children are safe and unharmed after the incredibly scary situation that occurred this morning. Truly disgusting that certain individuals choose to express their opposing views with such disturbing behavior."
Yeah, clearly whoever sent this wanted them to be afraid, wanted them to react the way they did. It's pretty sick.
Guy, the amount of money that ended up being spent to deal with all of this. We can talk about a hazmat crew and the hospital visit. You know, it's unfortunate there's not a faster way to determine that sort of immediately, but you have to take the appropriate precautions. But man,
when you're dealing with
just a colossal waste of money,
dealing with family members, with children, absolutely
crazy people.
Yeah, take all the precautions, and it's really sick, and twisted that people do this.
Number two.
It's official. Hamilton is going to hit Minneapolis for a 6-week run starting on August 29th. From the Star Tribune, more than a year after Hamilton was announced without any dates, Minnesota theatergoers can finally be in the room where it happens, starting August 29th. A six-week run of the blockbuster musical at Minneapolis's Orpheum Theater will kick off the Hennepin Theater Trust 2018 to 2019 season, which includes Broadway's other current biggest hit, Dear Evan Hansen. Hamilton blends influences from Jay-Z to South Pacific in its songs, and it's played to record-setting crowds and record-setting resale prices mm-hmm. since opening in 2015. I am super excited about this because I really, really love the soundtrack.
Yeah, the soundtrack's fantastic. I'm a big fan. I'm going to try to go.
Let's try to go.
I mean, I want to go.
Yeah, I want to go so bad.
But I don't know how much I'm willing to pay to go.
I know.
And if you can't get tickets, you know, when they first go on sale, if you're hitting the resale market, man, good luck.
Well, and apparently it's really, 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 really hard to get tickets because most cities are selling out well in advance. In San Francisco, individual tickets, which will be offered in Minneapolis a day later as yet unspecified date, were gone within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Previous cities have conducted a daily lottery, offering a few dozen tickets at $10 each. So hopefully we have something like that we'll be able to take it.
Well, and when you get an event like this with this kind of demand at this size theater, it's a decent size theater, but unfortunately, you have so many comped tickets. I mean, there's a huge chunk of the tickets that would normally be available to the public end up going to a lot of different entities and just aren't available because of the demand in different outlets that end up grabbing these comp tickets. So it's going to be one of those ones where it's going to be pricey and difficult to grab tickets for.
Well, the best way to get one of the 120,000 plus tickets is to subscribe to the Hennepin Theater Trust season, which includes 8 shows, according to this article from the Star Tribune. So.
Yeah, it's going to go quick. They're going to sell out. I mean, I'll keep an eye out for when it goes on sale. I'll try to get tickets when it goes on sale. But man, if I have to hit the resale market, then I'll probably just continue to enjoy the soundtrack.
Probably.
Hey, Sam. So you're given a choice. You can only do one. Are you going to T-Swift or are you going to Hamilton?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, if I can get like floor seats to Taylor Swift.
Well, I think I would roll towards it because I know how much you like Hamilton. I would go more towards Hamilton because T-Swift will tour again. But
so will Hamilton.
You think?
Oh, yeah. This Hamilton will be around forever. I mean, I was looking at the upcoming season. Les Mis is coming as part of the upcoming season. That, you know, once shows sort of reach a certain level, Book mm-hmm. of Mormon's coming back.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Engagement next season. So, yeah, they'll tour for years. So if you miss Hamilton this time around, within 3 to 4 years, it'll be back.
All right. I hope so, because I've been waiting for Cats for years.
When you say something like Cats.
You don't have to. It's been here.
What?
I don't believe you. I still want to see Hello, Dolly. We will continue with Sam's ridiculous top five right after this.
Justice.
I'm so hungry right now.
Chain talk.
I know. And then I had to go respond to a tweet, so I had to go grab images of PF Chang's food. And that made me even more hungry.
Listener tweeted at us using the hashtag TCNT. You all may want to rethink the PF Chang references. Sounds a bit racist. Not funny at all.
No, it's not racist. It's delicious.
It's not racist. It's, first of all, it's playing off a joke. Because a TV station put it on their graphic
right.
for the Olympics.
Right.
And can you be racist towards the name of a city?
Sure.
Can you?
Sure.
To me, it always needs, it's kind of directed at like individuals or groups of people.
Well,
not the name of a city. Did we offend the city?
You can in only because people can choose on their own to decide whether or not it is. It doesn't mean that it is.
Yeah.
It just means that people can choose to say that they believe that it is, so therefore
this listener can interpret it that way because they're looking for it, and it says more about them than it does anything else.
So it's so bizarre.
So irrational.
So weird. You're strange. It's true. I would never... Hate listen. I just don't. Why you want to waste your time? We must be
They secretly love us.
Yeah, I know. They must be incredibly entertained. You must be incredibly entertained by us so much that you
can't not listen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, I hate them so
much. I can't quit you.
I wish I could quit you. We didn't leave off in the midst of Sam's top five. Let's get right back into it.
Number three.
Target is going to roll out same-day delivery in the Twin Cities next month as it faces off with Amazon. From the Star Tribune, as Target makes a splashy entrance on the same-day delivery front and goes head-to-head with Amazon, its next battleground will be right here in the Twin Cities. The retailer is going to begin offering home delivery through shipped of groceries, essentials, electronics, toys, and other products in its hometown starting March 1st. This will be one of the first new markets for shipped since it was purchased by the Minneapolis-based Target late last year and will be followed by many more in the coming months. And when it rolls out here, shipped will make decisions, deliveries from about 50 Target stores and will reach nearly 1.2 million households, including the northern and southern suburbs. To support the rollout, Target and the Alabama-based Shipt are recruiting workers aggressively, offering introductory bonuses as they hire as many as 4,000 shoppers and delivery people here in the Twin Cities.
That's a fair number of jobs.
Yeah,
it really is. Yeah, absolutely. In total, Shipt plans to hire more than 100,000 people this year as it works to get same-day delivery up and running from nearly half of Target's over 1,800 stores in the next few months and from a majority of its stores by the holidays. John Mulligan, he's Target's chief operations officer. He said, the team is moving remarkably quick. We're going to be in all the major markets, and we bring a breadth of assortment that is not just food and beverage and grocery. We will have virtually the entire store by the end of the year, so that's a fantastic advantage.
Yeah, that's cool. This is an exciting time, you know. Amazon has changed the game for all these retailers, and it's kind of an exciting time to be a consumer and to be benefiting from all these changes and all these services that these traditional retailers, big box stores, are looking to offer to compete with Amazon.
Sam,
let the best one win.
Go ahead and continue with your story.
Yeah, so initially about 55,000 items or more than half of a typical Target store will be available for delivery through Shipt, which charges an annual membership of $99 for unlimited deliveries of over $35. To entice Twin Cities shoppers to give it a shot, it is offering a discounted annual rate of $49 to people who sign up before March 1st.
Now, this is where I'd love to see what their cost breakdown is, because what I'm wondering here is if they're planning on making money up front, or if the model is going to be over time, they're going to be making the bulk of the money from the subscriptions because people won't be always utilizing the service. So, for example, when you look at gift certificates and gift cards, right, the big return on those and why so many different outlets are keen to go and give them out is because the percentage is really low of people that actually go and use those gift cards. And so they end up making money, even though it looks like they're losing money. MoviePass is the same way. They're subsidizing the cost of movie tickets, and you have to subscribe for 10 bucks a month. But MoviePass eventually figures if they get enough people signed up, they'll end up making money for the people that don't end up going and using the MoviePass all the time. So I'd be really, really curious to see what the cost breakdown was on whether or not they figured out a way to make it economically viable in the beginning, or whether or not this is going to be mostly made up of subscription services and people that don't utilize it as much as they perhaps thought they would when they purchased the yearly $100 membership.
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I feel like, you know, within 3 to 5 years, a much more significant percentage of consumers will be taking advantage of these sort of home delivery options than currently do.
Well, and I think that Target and Walmart, in my opinion, are going to have a massive, massive advantage over Amazon. And when you look at like Whole Foods, simply because of location, you have so many Targets and Walmarts that are already there. If they start using those different places to send out the deliveries, you know, like we were talking about the Whole Foods. Well, I was talking to Melinda about it. There was no Whole Foods, you know, anywhere near where we live. But if Walmart starts doing this and Target starts doing this, yeah, absolutely, we'll start taking advantage of it.
Number four.
A Wisconsin Senate candidate's parents donated to the Democrat that he's trying to unseat.
Wah, wah.
Aw.
It's like, Mom!
That's gotta hurt.
Dad!
That's gotta sting a little bit.
From Fox News, the parents of a Marine combat veteran running to unseat Wisconsin's Democratic incumbent has reportedly donated the legal maximum to his opponent's primary campaign. Kevin Nicholson is trying to unseat Senator Tammy Baldwin from, she's in Wisconsin, of course, in the upcoming midterm elections. Besides the usual campaign issues, Nicholson has to respond to questions about why his parents appear to prefer his opponent. Donna and Michael Nicholson both donated $2,700 to Baldwin's primary campaign, the maximum amount permitted under the law for the period.
And they really, really don't want their son to win.
Apparently. The Republican hopeful did admit that his parents' politics differ from his, with the mother known for donating to Democratic groups and candidates.
Well, you know, maybe they're, maybe they're like, we're not going to make this easy for you, son. You know, like he's been raised in a very strict household.
You gotta earn this.
Yeah, obviously, Marine combat veteran. He knows, you know, how things can be tough and how to face challenges. And I imagine his parents probably were pretty strict when it comes to taking out the trash and picking up the dog poop to get his allowance. I'm not going to make it easy on you.
That's got to hurt.
Yeah.
Just I mean, it's got to, you go home and my parents even donated against me. It's entirely possible that these are the types of donors, because these types of donors do exist, that don't really pay attention to specifically who's running against who and just donate to candidates of a party.
Right.
Right. It's entirely possible that they weren't even paying that close attention and just like, oh, yeah, okay, Democrat, sure. Here's your check. Democrat, here's your check. Democrat, here's your check. And then we're like, oh,
oopsie.
We just donated to the Democrat that our son's running against.
Sorry, son.
Awkward.
My bad.
Number five.
The lawsuit on Senator Michelle Fischbach's additional role as Minnesota Lieutenant Governor has been dismissed.
For now.
Yeah, for now.
Yeah, for now. From the Pioneer Press, Michelle Fischbach may remain Minnesota Lieutenant Governor and a state senator, for now at least. A judge dismissed a lawsuit against Fischbach, a Republican from Painesville, on Monday, saying it was filed too soon. Too soon. Ramsey County Chief Judge John Guthman.
She got a too soon.
She got too soon.
Too soon, lady.
She's the too soon meme. Ramsey County Chief Judge John Guthman wrote that the suit by Destiny Desowski, who lives in Fischbach's district, lacks ripeness, adding that her
that
claim
is still green.
Guy's got to ripen. Adding that her claim is premature and based on speculation.
Your avocado is too hard.
He's just let us sit on the counter for a couple of days. He said that Dusowski, a Sauk Rapids resident, failed to demonstrate that she was injured in a way that is any different than all residents of Senate District 13. Also, Guthman mentioned a number of unknowns so far that dispute that tip control of the GOP-led state Senate. Guthman wrote that it is not known if Fischbach will retake her Senate seat, although she has said publicly that she will, or if she will vote. The judge added that it is not known if fellow senators will allow her to even remain in the Senate. Mm-hmm. However, Republicans who control the Senate have backed Fischbach's attempt to hold both jobs.
Right.
Also,
but none of that has actually happened yet.
Yeah, right. So also Guthman said that the court has no jurisdiction to decide if Fischbach is eligible to remain in the Senate. He said the state constitution does not specifically allow judges to remove a lawmaker from office, but it does allow for constituents through a recall election and the legislature with a two-thirds vote to remove a lawmaker.
Now, if you were listening to Justice and Drew, if you were listening to the show last week, we had on lawyer extraordinaire Jeff O'Brien to talk about this case. And Jeff, it appears that that Guthman ruled much like you predicted he would. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, he did. He if you read this, about a 28-page opinion, and starting about page 22, he starts quoting the legislature v. Dayton case, which is the case that he originally had in the district court level, and spanked the governor, found that using the line of veto was unconstitutional, and went up to the Supreme Court. And they, in an attempt to avoid having a, you know, being involved with politics, you know, kicked out their decision and said that there was other meat. They punted on it. And so he starts quoting from that case after he goes through the Sam mentioned that, you know, there was talk about lack of standing and the legislature hasn't convened yet. After he gets through all of that, he quotes that case and says this is the most recent case on this and we're supposed to stay out of it. So judges don't like being overturned. This is what they do: is they listen to cases and they write opinions, and they especially don't like being overturned for because of a court playing politics. So I was not surprised to see him use that decision. And the brilliant thing about it is, you know, is any appeal is going to be taken directly to the state Supreme Court, and they're going to be presented with either affirming his opinion that yesterday, or contradicting themselves on a matter that they just heard a few months ago.
Right.
So where does it? So what do you think? You did a good job predicting step one. Where do you think it goes now? What do you think happens?
Well, his opinion, if you read it, is really clear. He says that it is up to the Senate to determine the eligibility of its members, or if the constituents have a grievance against Michelle Fischbach serving in both roles, they can try to bring a recall petition. Of course, that's not going to happen because Michelle Fischbach's constituents really like her, and they have liked her for 20 years.
Right.
So what he's basically saying is keep the courts out of this. We're not providing a solution to this.
And that seems to be very appropriate in this instance. I mean, he's right. In the only two sort of constitutional mechanisms to remove an elected official from the legislature is a recall election or a 2/3 vote.
Right. That's exactly right. And this whole issue of disenfranchisement, like we talked about last week, the lieutenant governor does absolutely nothing. There's no reason that someone couldn't serve in the state Senate. And in the event that the lieutenant governor is ever needed, which is never, then she can perform those duties.
Right. So yeah. We can cross the bridge of if for some reason, you know, God forbid, Governor Dayton becomes incapacitated and unable to fulfill the role of governor, and Michelle Fischbach as lieutenant governor has to ascend to that seat. We can cross that bridge when we get to it, right? There's no reason Absolutely. To presume that will happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Again, you're talking about what really is a temporary appointment, because if the governor is not running again, his term is up in January. We're talking about less than a year of her serving in the dual role, and she was just elected as a state senator in November 2016, so she's through there through 2020 as state senator. So it really is ridiculous and reaching on the DFL's part to say that she's going to get bounced out of the state Senate over this.
I didn't read the entirety of the opinion. Did the plaintiff, this Destiny Dusosky, did she in her argument demonstrate how exactly she is being disenfranchised, or did she just say, "I'm being disenfranchised"?
Exactly. She just said she was being disenfranchised. The opinion brings that up, that there's really no evidence of how can you say you are disenfranchised at this point? She hasn't even taken the seat for the next session. So there's no evidence of any disenfranchisement. Because and that was the reason for the lawsuit, which is why it gets dismissed, right? There's no cause of action. So that's how it works. When there's no relief that can be granted, when there's no valid claim, a court grants a motion to dismiss.
Can a motion to dismiss be appealed?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, again, because of, if I recall from the legislature Dayton case, it went directly to the state Supreme Court. So my guess is the Supremes will hear this one directly and will bypass the Court of Appeals and go, because there's constitutional issues involved, and go right to the state Supreme Court. So yes, they can absolutely appeal it. But like I said, Judge Guffman did a really good job of boxing in the court to contradict its own opinion.
Well, you have proven as to the reason why we call you lawyer extraordinaire. Once again, Jeff O'Brien. Thanks for the time this morning, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right.
Well, and you look at the hopefully it is the end of it. When you look at the outcome of the special elections yesterday, the same balance of power in the legislature. Hopefully, you know, they'll kind of go, all right, let's just move on with life. Let's move forward. We got that past us. Well, let's get this past us. And I'm being overly optimistic.
You are. Tom Bach is
crazy,
determined to gain control of the Senate back, put the Senate back in DFL hands. And because the DFL candidate did win the special election for Dan Schoen's seat yesterday, then it still is a very, it's a close one vote balance. So if they can unseat Fischbach, and for somehow, I believe they will continue to try.
They need to not let it go. I am said it. Let it go. We done.
Well done, Sam. Excellent
test job.
Thank you.
All right, real quick, we can get into more details of this a little bit later on in the show, but the White House did release its 55-page, $1.5 trillion infrastructure plan. Well, you're right. You're right to go, huh, but the problem here is that the federal government is going to contribute $200 billion to the package, okay? There is a lot in here that calls for private investment. The proposal confirms many of the leaked details about a White House rebuilding initiative in which state and local governments, in addition to private investment, would foot much of the bill. The plan is structured around four main goals: generating $1.5 trillion for an infrastructure proposal, streamlining the permitting process down to 2 years, and investing in rural infrastructure projects and advancing workforce training. The problem that I want to know is what happens if we don't have the infrastructure plan? How much of this can be done by the states? And really, this is one of these plans where you really have to trust your elected officials who you've put into office to do their job to go through this to make sure, because that's a lot. I mean, that's to say it's a lot of money is an understatement. And it's a lot of faith and trust in the federal government to make sure that money is well spent. Not all of it is taxpayer dollars. A lot of it is taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, but the federal government is going to contribute $200 billion.
Right. This is where you've got to trust your elected officials to make sure that they're doing their due diligence, right? And ask them and talk to them. Have them explain to you why, if they are for this, it is a good idea. Because when you've got that much money, that's a lot of accountability. All the accountability that we need to have on this is absolutely necessary. And again, I want to know what happens if we don't do this.
Yeah, we'll spend some more time on this a little bit later in the show. I also want to get Pete Hegseth's thoughts on this when he joins us at 8:35. But coming up next, we're going to talk to Julio Rivera. He's the editorial director for ReactionaryTimes.com, a featured columnist at Newsmax.com. He's been analyzing the DACA situation and the fate of the undocumented DACA recipients. We'll talk to him next right here on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice